problem in this country.
There you go. You got it? You're in? The big problem in this country was mice. Mice was a serious problem. There were mice everywhere in this country. So what did the Jewish mind, the brilliant Jewish mind, decide to do? Ship in cats. So they brought lots of cats. If I'm not mistaken, they were Egyptian felines. They're not like American cats. You see the structure. The neck is a little bit like fatter, and it doesn't have the same grace as an American. It's much more aggressive than what you see in America. But they brought the cats in. And Baruch Hashem, we took care of the rat problem, the mice problem. Now, we've got another problem. We've got lots and lots of cats all over the place. There are so many cats in this country. You want to know why? Because we brought them here. Why am I telling you that? Because I want to tell you something. We have to have a karsa tov to the cats. Because the cats got rid of the mice. They got rid of the mice? Are there a lot of mice around? You see mice. You people talking about mice. Not so much. Okay, true on a derasa tov, we've had some rats problems over here, but it's because we don't let any cats upstairs. If we let the cats up, we get rid of the mice. So we have to have a karsa tov to the cats. Something's wrong here. One of the things that's wrong is because we've replaced our mice problem with our cat problem. And it's just bigger, right? And more aggressive. So you're right, no more mice. Now we've got to deal with the cats. Does that mean that if there were rabid mice that I shouldn't be thankful to the cats, that no more rabbits, for sure I'm going to be thankful to the cats. But the fact is, the cats are also posing a serious problem. So here, we have a problem in Israel. The problem is Israel's not a safe place for us. It's being governed by either the Turks or the British or whatever it might be. And there's no safe haven for where a fugitive or someone who is displaced can go. And comes the secular Israeli, establishes a state in Israel, and it gets rid of the mice. No more British. The British, they ran. Just want to get out of here. And now we have a Jewish state. Thank you for getting rid of the mice. Now we have to deal with the cats. So this sounds like a chad gadya. Now we need a dog to eat the cat that like ate the sheep. So how do you deal with that situation? This is the question. How do you deal with that situation? There were basically three approaches. Two extreme approaches, and then there's the mainstream. The two extreme approaches, we'll start with one. One of them was the approach of Rav Kook, and he was pretty much on his own in this approach. Pretty much. Which is, let's embrace them. Let's embrace them. Let's make the cats the heroes. Let's bring them, let's try to incorporate them into society, let's try to befriend them, and maybe the cats won't pose a problem anymore. Let's try to define the cats as no longer a problem. And he spoke very positively about secular Zionists and their Mesirut Nefesh for the land of Israel and everything that they did. That was Rav Kook's approach. And he was pretty much on his own. Pretty much. The closest thing that we know to Rav Kook's approach was Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. He was known, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, Yeshiva University, known by his followers as the Rav, my father's Rebbe. Soloveitchik was nowhere near Rav Kook. Nowhere near Rav Kook. He was the closest thing, but nowhere near. Because everyone else was very far from him. Rav Soloveitchik, my father was there. We sat down one day in Shir, and there were two boys that came late to Shir because they went to a Yom HaAtzma'ut celebration, and he blew his top. He said, any person that thinks that they should like not be in Shir because they should be by Yom HaAtzma'ut celebration cannot be in the same room as me. He was very fierce about it. People ask me, you say Hal and Yom HaAtzma'ut? He said, you could say Pirkei Tehillim whenever you want. A bracha! You can't do that. No. He was not in favor of Tfilas HaMedina, definitely not the text that is being said. His uncle, who he respected tremendously, said that it's apikarsus to say Tfilas HaMedina. Therefore, Reb Soloveitchik changed the language, because he doesn't like language. We can talk about it if you want. What exactly was the problem? It was the closest thing. He had no respect for Mizrahi. His nephew told me personally that he told him, these people are all empty people, there's nothing to them. But it was the closest thing. Reb Soloveitchik spoke about the Degel, the flag of Israel, and he said it has halachic significance because there are people that died as they were trying to put the flag down and they fell on the flag, so it got a din of tachrichi ameh, so therefore the flag of Israel has some sort of kedusha in a certain way. You can say he was trying very hard to give significance to what we call Zionism. But far from Rav Kook. Rav Kook was to the extreme. He was a saint of a man, but he was on his own. There's another extreme. The other extreme is the Neturei Karta, Satmar, the Brisker Rav. I'm going to put the Brisker Rav there. They're not exactly the same, but Neturei Karta and Satmar is basically one and the same. The Satmar Rav was fiercely anti-Haredi to the extent he wouldn't step on a bus. Anti-Zionist, because he wouldn't step on a bus, because buses are being funded by the Zionist establishment, he wouldn't step on a bus. He wouldn't go to the Kaisel, because if the Zionists are the ones who are in control of the Kaisel, they're metameh. This mountain, don't even go there. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He ended up leaving. But he was extremely, and he felt that anything that was being done by secular Jews in order to reestablish here in Eretz Yisrael as some sort of position is doomed for failure, is cursed, and cursed literally is based on klalas that are brought down in the Gemara, is no good. The Brisker Rav was similar, not the same. The Brisker Rav, as we said, also rejected any type of involvement. Ben-Gurion asked to meet with the Brisker Rav, and he said, no, I'm not meeting with you. Refused. When he heard, I heard this from Shimon Schwab myself, from Shimon Schwab said, if the Brisker Rav would hear someone saying Tfilas Medina, he would scream, Apikorsus, Apikorsus. These are the two extreme positions. So Briskers are not mishtatef in the Bechiras, in the Bechirot, in the government. They have absolutely no involvement in the government, and nothing to do. They're not even Goyris. Not Goyris the government. Then there's the middle. The middle is people that recognize the shortcomings and the problems with the government, but at the same time feel that it's perhaps necessary to engage them. The Chazon Ish met with Ben-Gurion. He spoke to Ben-Gurion. Reb Shach was part of the government. Reb Shach read Degel HaTorah. He was part of the government. He was in the government. He was telling people, let's vote. We should vote. For what purpose? Because we're here. And as long as we're here, we have to deal with it. Not because we appreciate it, not because we accept it, but we acknowledge that it exists. It's a reality. Those are the three approaches. Reb Shach, this is the story. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Israeli politics. All governments have different structures. The Israeli politics works as follows. You have to form a coalition. It's not about, you know, like in America, pardon me, for I don't know how it goes in other countries, the people that are here in America, basically, you have a vote, you vote for president, he's president, 4 years, we're done, we're finished. That's all it is. He is the president. It doesn't work like that here. Here, there's a parliament, there's the Knesset, there's a coalition which you have to make, which is that the prime minister, whoever it might be, has to have other people that are willing to be a part of the coalition, and if they pull out, then he becomes ICE prime minister. He's no longer, they have to do new elections, and they're actually threatening it right now. Because Netanyahu is a very small coalition, so what he's trying to do is he wants to get the extreme leftists, his name is Herzog, to join his coalition. So now Bennett is getting nervous that he's going to lose his power in the coalition, so he's threatening to pull out. So if Bennett pulls out, coalition falls. And then you have to do elections. I do not remember, I don't correct me if I'm wrong, once in the past 20 years that a prime minister lasted all 4 years. I don't remember once. There's always early elections in this country. They're always fighting, and he's pulling out. It never lasts, never went full term. I do not remember once in 20 years. I might be wrong. I don't remember once in 20 years. I don't think it's happened. There's always early elections. Because that's the structure of how this government works. So now you have a situation. Degel HaTorah is this teeny, teeny little party. If I'm not mistaken, one seat. And you've got the extreme right, Likud. The extreme left is Labor. It's Shimon Peres and Yaakov Shamir. That's their names. Shimon Peres is the left. Yaakov Shamir is the right. Yitzchak Shamir is the right. And they're 50-50, okay? Whoever Reb Shach decides to vote for is going to be prime minister. So the entire government is waiting for there's the one seat in the Knesset, the Haredim are going to decide who's going to be prime minister. Because again, it's not just about who has more votes. Now you got to figure out, you have to create a coalition. So he created a coalition of exactly 61 seats. He created a coalition of exactly 61 seats. And there's one seat left. It's the Haredi seat. Who's he going to? He's going to make an announcement. Shach's going to make an announcement. The entire country is waiting to hear what he has to say. The entire country. Because we got to figure out who's prime minister. They take out a stadium in Tel Aviv called Yad Eliyahu, I think it's called. And Shach's giving a big speech. This is the most famous speech ever given in this country by a Haredi politician. It was extremely famous because he got a lot of people in. Got a lot of people angry. And this background to the story, I could tell you the details of the background. Reb Shach was like very focused before he spoke. He didn't allow anyone to come in to speak to him. And there was one secular Jew who had a dream that Reb Shach's Rebbe came to him in his dream. And he went in and he told Reb Shach, I have to speak to you. Because it was his grandfather. And he asked him to speak to him. And that meeting changed the course of Reb Shach. It's unbelievable. The story is really unbelievable. But I want to get down to what happened. Reb Shach got up, bashed the kibbutzim and the moshavim, and he's talking about how leftist they are and how non-religious they are, and they don't know who their father is, and they eat rabbits, and they have no respect for Shabbos, and he mamish went off on them, and he said, I'm siding with Yitzchak Shamir. He became prime minister. And it was like real, a lot of people took it very personally because he really dug into them. The reason I'm telling this story because of the, I think it's called the epilogue, what happened is as follows. After Reb Shach passed away, I heard a hesped on Reb Shach by his son. Reb Shach had a son named Ephraim Shach. Ephraim Shach was not a rabbi. He was a doctor. He was a professor. He was what they call Mizrahi. We're kippah suga. Him and his father had famous disagreements. Okay, now I actually have to start telling the truth. This is unbelievable. This is the most amazing hesped I ever heard in my life was Ephraim Shach say a hesped on his father. I heard the hesped. I think I have a recording, I'm pretty sure. It's on tape if anyone has anything to do with the tape. Ephraim Shach is masped his father. It was unbelievable. First of all, the anivus of the person was really astounding. It was astounding. He's being masped his father. He's an only son. And his father and him didn't get along great. They had a relationship. His father said, as long as me and you both believe, we can have conversation. As long as you're a maimon, we'll have conversation. But it was a very famous disagreement in the family. The thing that was most amazing to me was the following. First of all, there were stories he told about Reb Shach. I have some time, I'll share with you a story. Listen to this unbelievable story about Reb Shach. Just so you can appreciate who we're talking about. Reb Shach lived in Bnei Brak. He was a Reshiva Panovich. He wasn't just a Reshiva Panovich. He had a notebook about all the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. How many bachram were in the yeshiva. And like everything, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Mashgiach, everything. A Rosh Yeshiva calls him up, says, I'm having an issue with the Talmud. Can the Rosh Yeshiva please meet him? Asked if Reb Shach can meet this boy. Reb Shach never met the boy before in his life. But he's having issues. The boy's having issues. Sure. Comes to Reb Shach's house. 10:30 at night. Shach sits with him for an hour and a half. It's 12 o'clock. And he decides the boy, he says the boy needs help. Feels like the boy needs some professional help. So he has a psychologist that he's close with in Yerushalayim. He calls him up on the phone. And he says, I have a boy that I think needs some help. I'd like you to please speak to him. So the person said, sure, that's not a problem. Give him my phone number and tell him that he should call me. I'll make an appointment. Reb Shach said, no, I want you to see him tonight. He said, tonight? I can't see him tonight. So he called me at 12 o'clock in the morning. Until he gets here, it's going to be 1 o'clock in the morning. Stays for 2 hours, 3 o'clock in the morning. What happens if the boy's not in a state to be able to go back 3 o'clock in the morning and have a boy who's like, you know, I can't do that. Shach says, okay. And if I send someone to go with the boy and wait for him outside, then you'll see him now? Okay, if the Rashiva wants, I'll do it. Okay, he's coming. The boy comes, 1 o'clock in the morning, he's there till 3 o'clock in the morning, leaves at 3 o'clock, goes on his way. Psychologist the next morning goes to shul. They see someone in the shul, and the person says to him, do you know why Reb Shach was standing outside in our hallway, like in the middle of the night? What was he doing there? Reb Shach took a boy he never met before in his life to Yerushalayim, waited for 2 hours outside while he met with the psychologist, and took him back to Bnei Brak. Could you imagine?
It was Leil B'Tikas Chametz.
And it was Leil B'Tikas Chametz. I forgot to mention that because I didn't know it. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Could you imagine the greatness of this person? He had so much on his shoulders. And he cared about every single yeshiva bracha. So Ephraim Shach said the following thing. I think he told the story. I'm not sure if it was him or Berniker. He said, my father used to walk down the street and he'd see a parent with a child and he'd look into the stroller with so much nachas. He'd be so proud. It's a beautiful cheder yingol, a beautiful little maidel. He had so much nachas from yeshiva bar. So he said, Tate, I'm your only son. You didn't have nachas for me. You didn't. But every single yeshiva bachar in this country was like your son. You should have nachas from all of them. I was in awe. I had goosebumps. Could you imagine the modesty? That's what he said. So he was talking, he said, that after this whole thing with Reb Shach and he spoke in Yad Eliyahu, they wanted to interview Ephraim Shach on the radio. They asked if they could interview him. And he said, I know why they want to interview me. They want to interview me because of who I am. They want to interview me because of my father. I said, out of respect to my father, I'm going to ask my father if he lets me interview them. Because I'm not doing any. If it was for me, then I could do what I want. But they're doing it because they just want to get, you know, Reb Shach's son. Hear what he has to say? I asked my father. I don't remember if he did the interview or not. But in the course of the interview, while it was evolving, you know, it was heaven or not, he met with the head of Shomer HaTzair. Shomer HaTzair is the young Zionist party. And he told Ephraim Shach the following thing. He said, I don't know why everyone's getting so upset about what your father said. Your father knows exactly what our agenda is. Our agenda is to be oiker yahadus. Is to be oiker yahadus, is to uproot Yiddishkeit. That is the agenda of Shomer HaTzair, of the young Zionist movement. Your father did a great job at describing what we want to do. That's what he said. This is what Ephraim Shach, who's not Haredi, was describing his father's brilliance and his insight. So I want to give you just a small little, and there's so much to talk about, I want to just talk a little bit. I'm quoting from Yonason Rosenblum. Yonason Rosenblum is someone who writes for Jerusalem Post and for other magazines, other newspapers. The reason I mentioned Jerusalem Post is because it is not a religious, it's actually very anti-religious. But because of the quality of his reporting, so they allow him to have an article. And he's speaking about something called Yalde Tehran. Many of you might not know what that is. But it's very important to understand, in order to understand, what is the foundation of this state of Israel? What is the foundation of the state? Yalde Tehran were 1,000 orphaned Polish-Jewish refugees. 1,000 Polish-Jewish refugees. And they were displaced. They weren't in Poland. They were in Tehran during the first years of World War II. They were in a camp, a refugee camp, which was run by the Jewish Agency. Now, when I think Jewish Agency, I usually think, makes me feel fuzzy and warm and good. But listen to what the Jewish Agency did. The Jewish Agency insisted on giving them non-kosher food. Insisted. No more of this kosher stuff. And the kids weren't eating. Because they came from Jewish, they all came from religious families. So the anti-religious Shomer HaTzair member said the following thing: let one or two of them die of starvation, and the rest will soon forget about their kosher food. So we're going to kill these kids in order that they shouldn't be religious. Or at least one or two of them, and then the rest of them will forget about being kosher. Children were forbidden to say Kaddish for their parents. They were forbidden. So this is not a question of, you know, we want a state where everyone could live their own lifestyle. This is, we want a state that is removed from religion. Religion is dying in Europe with the old Jew. No more religion. We're going to shut this religion down. If we have anyone that is in our power, control, to make them not religious, we will do that. 1,000 children, Terah. So intent was the Jewish Agency to do this, that when the Polish government offered money for their Polish citizens, I'll give you money in order to help them, but you have to give them their religious rights. The agency said, no, no religion here. Keep your money. We don't want any religion. That was Yalde Tehran. It happened again when the children reached Eretz Yisrael. They came here to Eretz Yisrael. Agudas Yisrael prepared 600 places for children to be able to live with religious families. They were denied. All of the children were put in non-religious kibbutzim, non-religious homes. They were forced to go to clubs on Yom Kippur and to eat. Chazer treif on Yom Kippur. Pig, eat on Yom Kippur. Because we're eradicating any feeling, any association with Yiddishkeit. And this is the Jewish Agency. This is the government. The chief rabbi of Israel, his name was Rav Herzog, he was so outraged by what was written in the magazine, the newspaper of Haaretz, they called it soul snatching. They were stealing people's neshama. He was so upset that he said that there should be a boycott of all funds from the Jewish Agency, which is going to be very difficult and obviously didn't happen. They went so far that there's a person I know, his name is Yehuda Giat, who when he was born, they told his mother that he died. In the hospital, they stole the child in order to send him to a kibbutz and make him not religious, because his mother was religious. And he was stolen. And his mother said, I want to see my baby. He said, he's dead. He said, I want to see him anyway. He said, it's not good for a mother. She said, I want to see my baby. And they brought her a dead baby. And she said, this is not my baby. This is not my baby. She started screaming and yelling, and she got her baby back. I know the boy. It's not a boy, he's an old man now. Yehuda Giat. And this didn't happen once or twice. This was consistently pulling children away from their parents to make them not religious. You won't believe the quote I'm going to tell you. when Yidden came from Teiman, which is Yehuda Giat was from Teiman, they came to what's called an absorption center, which is a place where they try to, like, you know, get them acclimated to being here in Eretz Yisrael, right? And there was a shul and a base medrash, locked, never opened. No one's going into shul, no one's going into base medrash. Weren't allowed. When they were placed in children's homes, famously, these little Teimanasha kids with their Teimanasha payas, all shaved. The payas were shaved off. And parents who tried to register the children in religious schools were told that their work cards were going to be taken away from them. The government said, your children are in religious schools, you can't work. They can't survive without working. They wouldn't have a work card. So they had no choice, send the kids to non-religious schools. So the government is trying to eradicate religion, which is what Reb Shach said. Which is what Dr. Shach, Dr. Ephraim Shach said, Shomer Tzair said, your father is exactly what we want to do. We are trying to uproot Yiddishkeit. We want to make something called Israeli. Not Yidden. Israelis. Not Jews. Israelis. And stop the whole religion. So listen to this. This is the quote, Rabbi Say. It's lo yuman. It's not believable that someone would have the audacity to write this. It's in a publication called Kol Ha'ir from Yerushalayim. And he describes the methodology of how the government works in order that at least the young would have some chance. We got to give some chance to the younger generation. The tradition has to be destroyed. The family structure has to be destroyed. Respect for parents and elders has to be destroyed. The same sad, cruel choice. Tradition or integration. That's your choice. Either religion or integrating into society returns today. This time, too, circumstances force us to face the cruel fact, better the salvation of the young, so at least they can integrate. Do you understand what they're saying? Do you understand what they're trying to do? Their focus, their agenda? Their agenda is, anyone who comes here, we want to make them not religious. How do we do that? We have to destroy respect for elders. We have to destroy the family fabric. We have to destroy anything vestige of religion and tradition. Because or else, there's no hope for them. There's no hope for the Haredim. There's no hope for the yeshiva people. There's no hope for the religious. They have to leave that behind. It's the new world. And this is our stake. We're in control. We're going to decide what to do. We're going to cut off religion. That is the foundation of this state. That was happened in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 90s. This was written in the 90s. About Ethiopians. Ethiopians came here in the 90s. We did it in Tehran, we did it in Teiman, and we're doing it in Ethiopia. That's what we do. They come here, we make them not religious. Now I ask you, we had a problem with cats. We had a problem with mice. It was a big problem. The British, the Turks, whoever else. The cats, I'm not so sure if they're that much better. And I'm not so sure that they're our friends. They might pretend to be our friends. But there's clear evidence here of something that's seriously rotten in the core of the establishment of this state. Now, does that mean we shouldn't have some form of hakaras hatov, gratitude, especially to the individuals? Because I can tell you like this. Most of the soldiers that are out there, Yankel Shmerel or whatever the Kobe, whatever the Israeli names are, you know, Dudu and Kobe, and they're not like interested in like uproot. They don't know anything. They're just like, you know, they're. So we shouldn't have hakaras hatov to the fact that this guy put his life on the line, in order that we should be able to live here. Do we not have any type of gratitude or respect? Is there no decent? Of course we do. And of course we should. And I want to tell you, anytime you see a person who is involved in combat, you have to realize that he's risking his life. And because of him, you feel safe here. And that's something you shouldn't forget. Does that mean that when the state decides, we're going to make Yom HaZikaron, we have to listen to the state? The state is trying to destroy us. The state hates us from the very inception. Ben-Gurion hated us. He'd rather one cow in Israel than 50,000 Jews in the Gola. We're not interested in Jews from exile. Not interested. He just wants a state. Secular. So we have to dance to the beat of the secular state of Israel? Absolutely not. Again, there's Rav Kook, who's an extremist in one direction. I said, okay, let's hope it gets better. It's going to get better. We're still waiting. I see it getting a lot worse. And then there's Naturi Karta, who's like, okay, forget it. We're just going to like totally ignore them. But I'll tell you what just happened. It just happened. They just made a decision in the Israeli army. The decision in the Israeli army is that no one who wears a beard is allowed to high-level official ceremonies in the Israeli army. No, which means, basically, no rabbis are allowed at any ceremonies by the Israeli army. No one with a beard. Beard is not military. So you have a beard, you're not allowed by the seminary. Now he said, listen to this craziness. This year, by the Seder, Leila Seder, the rabbis were not allowed to go into the different camps to be able to run the Seder. Because the head of the army said, listen, you know, the menpe, which is the person in charge of the platoon, so he, you know, takes them through all their campaigns. He should be able to take them through the Seder also. They don't need rabbis. No rabbis are allowed in. What's going on? But this is what's happening. I have someone who I used to speak to a lot. He was in the army, in the Israeli army. So someone there was wearing a yarmulke on his head, said to him the following thing. You're going back to America? I want to tell you something. It's better to be in Israel and be Mechalel Shabbat than to be a from Jew in Chutz Laretz. What's going on over here? The whole ideology, the whole philosophy is totally krum. It's totally shred. And that's what they're trying to inculcate. When they send people, we're going to in any way try to embrace their structure. They're going to try to exert their influence over us to make us not religious. That's what they want. They say they want Haredim in the army. It's all baloney. They don't want Haredim in the army. Trust me, they don't want Haredim in the army. They need us going to mikveh in the morning and, you know, and davening, like, you know, extra long. They don't need us. This is a huge army. It's not about that. It's about if I can get the Haredim in the army, I'll make them not Haredim. I have a friend who's in a very big yeshiva here in Israel. A modern yeshiva, one of the, you know, yeshivas that send boys to the army. He told me every single boy that we sent to the army had a yerida. Every single one of them. Not one of them came out the way he went in. How could you come out the way he went in if they're coming to the army and they're screaming about you, about how, you know, terrible, you know, the religion is, and they tell them that it's more important to live in Israel and you can be Mechal Shabbat and all this other, there's so much garbage that they're hearing over there. Because they're not religious people, they're anti-religious people. Even when you're dealing with what's officially called a religious platoon. This is the influence. That's the agenda. That's what they're saying their agenda is. This is what we want to do. So there should be hope for the next generation. We have to destroy their appreciation for tradition. We have to break the family fabric. That's what they're trying to do. So when they have us in their army, so what do? They keep on injecting more venom and more venom. More of this, like, this animosity until after a while, you know, it wears off. Especially, they have so much respect for this big, tall, strong guy. Everyone's like, wow, the menpe. It's like the Gadol Hador. He's like, you know, it's like the modern Rambo. I'm like, whoa. So and people listen to him. You get influenced. You can't. How can you not get influenced if you're in that? So Abayisai, I can't say it's black and white. It's not like there's a lot of good things that came out of the establishment. The fact that now we have relative calm. We definitely don't have peace. We definitely don't have peace in this country. But we're able to be here. And we're here without the threat, the fear of the threat of imminent danger. Hashem should watch over us. But at the same time, if you understand the agenda of the people who have come in here, it wasn't in order to be able to allow us to practice our religion freely. That wasn't what they wanted to do. In no way. The concept of Yom HaTzma'ut. Yom HaTzma'ut is supposed to be on the day that Ben-Gurion announced the declaration, the Israeli Declaration of Independence, which itself is fraught with very big issues as far as, first of all, whether it's authentic, you know, the validity of the things that he wrote in there in that document, and also other issues that exist. But did they have to make Yom HaTzma'ut during Sfiras HaOmer? I mean, they're not that careful about the day. V'haraya, we moved the day, right? We moved it, like, they moved it just right now, this year. Why? Because it doesn't work, you know, because they're full Shabbos. Or, why do you have to make, Yom HaTzma'ut during Sfiras HaOmer? Why? Because he made a declaration during Sfiras HaOmer? Now, there's different... You could have made it maybe during first Sfira, when people will be knowing the second Sfira, or make it during the second Sfira, we can know the first Sfira. Do you have to do it in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer? They did. Yeah, that's their agenda. We want to do it k'neged halacha. We want to go k'neged halacha. That's what they're looking to do. And for us to celebrate the miracles that happened, and I want to tell you, there was unbelievable miracles that happened to the Yidden. We were, if I'm not mistaken, the odds were 50-1. We were outnumbered. I can check that. Rabbi Buckle, I'll check the exact number, but I have it written down. I believe it was 50-1. We were being attacked from every single border. And on every border, we were being outnumbered. It was like, no way for us to win. It was like, forget it. It's over. We're done. There's no way we're going to win this war. Everyone attacked us. And it was a miracle. So for us to, like, forget the miracle would be horrible. We should for sure remember, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hinei lo yonum v'lo yishan shem Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu will never forget us. We shouldn't forget. But is that what they're celebrating? Yom HaTzma'ut? Really? Is that what's going on? I was there last night. I didn't hear anyone talking about, thank you Hashem. That wasn't what was going on. It was just a lot of partying and a lot of just wild. There's nothing religious about it. Nothing that directed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing in the declaration that mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all about forgetting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that we're supposed to celebrate with them. So we want to celebrate Hashem's miracles. Anim Ba'ad. I'm asking, we should celebrate. We can make a day, we'll talk about all the miracles, modern miracles, the Gulf War miracle, the miracle of the Yom Kippur War, the miracle of 67, the miracle of the all the different campaigns. We could for sure celebrate them. They were all amazing. Every single one of them was crazy. Every one of them. And we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have to thank all the soldiers that put their life on the line. Whether they were thinking of us, weren't thinking of us, I don't think that those are the people who, you know, who are trying to shmad Yidden. They're just innocent Jews that understand that they want to fight for the country and for the people. And we have to have respect and we have to thank them. They're the ones that were showing Geschmid. Yeah, they're the ones that, they're the carbonos. But that has nothing to do with what the state established. It doesn't have to do with, you know, making a tefillah or anything of that sort. Is in any way trying to allow the state to to set a tempo or establish any type of a structure of how Klal Yisrael is going to be noyeg? Absolutely not. And if we could try to tread that very delicate balance, is hakaras hatov to the individuals, appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracles, but at the same time realize that the Gula Shleima is not here. Should be zoche, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us, that we should see ourselves, our own personal salvation, and we should be zoche to see Mashiach Tzidkenu, v'mheiro v'yameinu. Amen.
A little too politically correct, but so.
I wanted to do it.
I'm in the customer.
Why?
Yeah, I was smooth about it. I'm not.
Already.